Just a little bit of background. I would like to acknowledge my co-workers on this project, Deepa Jahagira and Sally Wyke and Karen Ritchie. I just want to say, to preface the presentation, to acknowledge the funding mechanism that's actually behind it. Deepa, who's listed there as the first author on this paper, is a research associate who was brought on by a knowledge transfer project mechanism that we have in the United Kingdom, which is a knowledge transfer partnership funded by a government and funded by a company. And the company for us is Healthcare Improvement Scotland, which is a semi-private enterprise, which basically is supporting the NHS in making, implementing guidelines, making decisions in Scotland. And so Deepa is really based between the universities that are involved, so Dundee University and Glasgow University, and is also located in the company. And so it has been a very successful mechanism to get knowledge into practice. Closer? Yeah. Trying, or I bring myself closer. Is this better? No. Is it on? Okay. I'll try this. Better? Okay. Well, no relationships to disclose. Now, what is this presentation about? Who of you can read this? Well, I think you might be able to figure it out slowly. Yeah? Takes you quite a bit of effort. Right. How about this? Takes a little bit of time, really, to make sense of that. Slightly better? Yeah? How about this? Okay, this is what we're talking about. Patient-reported outcome measures are really a number of self-report measures that are currently considered. I think you have something similar in the US. It's called PROMISE, you know, this initiative to bundle a number of self-report measures together that have been actually initially designed and developed for very different heterogeneous purposes. And all they share really is in common that they have some link to health reported outcomes and that they're completed by the patient. Now, we have some problems with this, unsurprisingly, otherwise I wouldn't be here. Well, first of all, it is said that PROMs measure quality from the patient perspective, quality of clinical procedures. PROMs calculate the health gain after surgical treatment using pre- and post-operative surveys. In the UK and England particularly, it has been mostly used around hip replacements, knee replacements, hernia and varicose veins. And so acute procedures with a clearly defined admission and discharge. Now, I said already these measures are quite heterogeneous. And the problem is that they have been designed for very different purposes. And all they share, like I said, they share in common is that they're completed by the patient. But have they been validated? Have they been developed by all the population that is concerned by it? That's one of the questions. And how do people really interact with these measures if they might have different challenges in responding to these measures? So we have an issue around what they actually measure, and they're proposed to being used for quality improvement purposes. And since April 2009, all providers of the National Health Service have been required to collect these PROMs, and to require these self-completed health-related quality of life measures. And the other problem that I have with these measures, of course, is quality of life. Do they really measure quality of life? And others have already worked on that. Mark Rapley has worked and disaggregated the concept of quality of life quite critically. In the US, we have work by Dave Gray, who looked at some of the quality of life measures, whether they make sense for people who have mobility impairments and so on. Now, why are we particularly concerned? I think in England, now these PROMs are also considered in a pilot for people with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So the first time that they're rolled out for people with a long-term condition. COPD, just use COPD just to make it easier, it's a lung disease, so it's a respiratory disease. And we also know that respiratory disease is possibly the leading cause of death. It's debatable cardiovascular disease of some people with intellectual disabilities. And it's much higher than that found for the general population. We also know, and there's an abundance of literature, that health literacy matters, you know, and that lower health literacy has been also linked to poorer health status and outcomes and COPD. And we also know from various authors, Beth Marks in the US and Roberts, they've pointed out that it's really important that people understand and can interact with the information that they receive in the healthcare system. And they also pointed out that not all patients may be equally able to interact with the same type of written information that's made available in the healthcare system. And we clearly see PROMs as written information that is presented to people before and after treatments. So in summary of this background is, the PROM focus on the patient perspective is a good one. Of course we want the patient perspective. We want the individual's perspective on how health matters and what outcomes matter. The PROM standardization is very problematic. It requires health literacy, and people with intellectual disabilities and low literacy skills may be unfairly disadvantaged. And quality of care decisions based on PROMs, very problematic. And people with intellectual disabilities, we've been excluded from this process of developing the PROMs, but also from having the right assistance to complete these measures is a violation of human rights. So our aim was to explore how routine data collection using PROMs can be made more inclusive for people with low literacy and or learning disabilities, and we're using the UK the term learning disabilities rather than intellectual disabilities, so that's just by way of explaining that. What do we mean by inclusive? I already alluded to that. Have people with intellectual disabilities been involved in the development of questionnaires? Can people with intellectual disabilities use these questionnaires? And finally, what needs to be done to make the process around it more inclusive? We have a study with three phases. The first one looking at existing PROMs with focus on COPD, so these patient-reported outcome measures that have been developed and are considered for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Phase two is a qualitative study looking at exploration of practical usability of existing PROMs. And the third one is to develop a feasibility test, a practitioner-focused guide, and giving them advice. Phase one, we selected two systematic reviews in the area by Fitzpatrick and Davies, and they consider both respiratory disease-specific PROMs, but also generic, so generic quality of life measures. Examples include for the generic ones, SF36, EQ5D, so-called quality of life, even though I would argue they're health and functional status measures, not quality of life measures. But also the St. George Respiratory Questionnaire and Chronic Respiratory Questionnaire. So have they been involved and included in development and validity testing? And the surprising answer is, can you guess? Nope. Just a few slides to illustrate that we actually did the work. We looked at 53 primary study articles that involved these PROMs for COPD. Also did hand searches of relevant journals. And don't worry about the right-hand side of this slide, which is just a table, just illustrating, really demonstrating that we really did the work. What we found is there are two types of exclusion, which we labeled as explicit and implicit exclusion. Explicit is, well, we don't want people with intellectual disabilities or low literacy or communication disabilities in the study. So they explicitly and definitely excluded from participation. Cannot read, you're out. Cannot think in the way we think, you have to think, you're out. Second way is implicit by omission. So I have not thought about including them. So there's not an explicit exclusion criterion, but but they are not in the sample characteristics flagged up. So none of the studies mention specific efforts to include people with low literacy skills and intellectual disabilities. Four studies excluded these groups explicitly based on eligibility criteria. 26 studies had implicit exclusion only relating to non-inclusive recruitment, newspapers, postal packages, and so on. 9 studies excluded people with intellectual disabilities explicitly and implicitly, and 14 studies were unclear, but we didn't have enough information. Now let me talk a little bit about phase two, what we did. We talked to people with intellectual disabilities, and we talked to people who were health professionals. Not health professionals, but health professionals. We asked them questions about 2 questionnaires, the EQ-5D, a generic PROM, and the St. George respiratory questionnaire. And they looked like this. It's the EQ-5D. Has questions about mobility and self-care, usual activities, pain, discomfort, and anxiety, depression. And this is the St. George respiratory questionnaire, the SGRQ. What we asked people with intellectual disability, so can you understand the questions that are being asked? What do these questions ask? What do you think about the wording? What about the format? Can you see the questions well enough? Where would you like to fill out the questionnaire? Do you want help or assistance? When would you like to fill out the questionnaire? And we asked health professionals, when and how can this questionnaire best be used with people with intellectual disabilities? And what we found was a range of unsurprising issues from people with intellectual disabilities. They said, well, this questionnaire doesn't make sense. It's too complex. The wording is too difficult. I don't understand the format, how it's arranged on the page. The tick boxes don't make sense to me. And this came out after a while in discussing this issue with them in a sort of semi-structured approach. And they also, we talked to them, would you like to have a color-coded response format to make it easier? A lot of them said, no, that's more confusing. They don't want that. But I think what was most critical is time and location and assistance. People said they didn't want to be rushed in a doctor's or provider office or in the hospital in the waiting room to complete a questionnaire rapidly. They would rather take it home. They'd rather take their time where they have the assistance and the privacy to complete the questionnaire. And they also wanted help and assistance of a person that they trusted. There was a lot of distrust also in terms of what they thought this questionnaire would be used for. So they really didn't trust its use and its applicability. Both the health professionals actually and the people with intellectual disabilities converged on this because they said both, well, we don't want to have this as another exercise for collecting data for the purposes of statistical analysis at a high population level. We want, if we collect these, we want it to have an immediate applicability value. We want to see it makes a difference in how we make decisions about care. So these are some quotes just to illustrate. This is too confusing. Wouldn't understand that. Would they, the word imaginable, worse imaginable, I think you have to use the words good or bad. Or I feel bad about filling in forms on my own. There was a bad experience behind this. So reliance on a supporter and personal assistant. And if that's not there, it's not given or possible, then the person rather decides not to fill it out. A lot of people felt also it's too personal to filling it out in a waiting room, and it's too noisy potentially. Now what we've been doing now as the next step is taking all this information on board and developed really an information guide for health professionals that focuses on the caveats of using these PROMs in practice. At the moment, the Scottish situation is slightly different than in the English situation. There's not an immediate push to pull out these standardized measures, and there's a lot of discussion in Scotland compared to England about patient experience, which I personally think is really an important one because it is taken on board other ways of data collection rather than a just uniform standardized approach that one size fits all. So we've produced this guide, ran it out to people again, and checked back what they thought of it, and we're currently revising it. And we have also a webinar on this topic on our website, sdhi.ac.uk website. If you scroll down to the topic, you'll find it on the news page. So what we think what needs to be done in the future is researchers and healthcare professionals need to work with people with intellectual disabilities to find the best ways to include them both in research, in developing these tools, as well as in practice development. And of course, it's a human right to be involved in that, right, if we want to take UN Convention seriously. Health professionals should use existing questionnaires with caution, and not exclusively. Policymakers must be aware that people with intellectual disabilities are excluded from service improvement if this is not done flexibly. So and we're talking about learning disabilities, but equally I could have talked about people with dementia. I could have talked about people with probably cognitive impairments as a result of traumatic injuries to the brain, people with after stroke who might have communication difficulties and cognitive impairments. So it's a long list of people and a huge proportion of the population. So one size does not fit all. If you're interested in this topic, so far we have two related publications out. One is currently in press. Third one is currently under review. And I'm happy to provide more details on that. So thank you very much.